Oregon Legislature. And good morning, everyone. And present today, Commissioner Burns, Commissioner Garber, Commissioner Wilhelms, staff, Marjorie Taylor, and Representative Wayne Krieger is not here, and Sheriff Ramirez is ill today. So we will proceed along with our first agenda item today, and that is going to be a walking tour of the building to familiarize ourselves further with the plant. Let me ask Marjorie, anything we need to cover before we go into recess and take a walk?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't think so. I think we have good staff here that will lead us on a tour.
Sounds good. We're looking forward to it. So the committee will stand in recess, and we expect to be back here approximately 11 o'clock. Legislature will reconvene. I hope you enjoy the tour, and I'd like for those who are watching on television or listening by the internet, I would like for those folks to have an idea of what we have just seen here over the last 2 hours. So joining us would be the tour guide today, Herb Colum, and Dave Henderson here today as well. And so, gentlemen, if you would just describe for those who are listening or watching what we have seen here in the last 2 hours.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Herb Colum, Facility Services Manager. We took a tour of the building, both the wings and the older portion of the original building, pointing out things that need to be corrected that have been long-standing neglected items. Just start out with some of the finishes throughout the building, the brass that needs to be worked on, and some of the broken marble, to the more basic things such as base isolation, the mechanical structures that serve the entire building. We showed the members the entire governor's suite, both the ceremonial offices and where his staff works on the first floor, from the standpoint of what needs to be done there, of making it look more like a ceremonial office so that it's something that the public can be proud of when they walk into the building. And then we showed the pitiful state of the members' offices with what their staff has to put up with now, and describe what the upgrades would be if we were to be able to go forward with our wings project.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Dave, any words from you?
I would just say I'd like to thank the members of the committee. For the record, Dave Henderson, Legislative Administrator, and we appreciate the time that you've taken to look into the building. As you will learn over time, we had funding approved at one point for renovating the wings where we have serious health and safety concerns. Unfortunately, that was right in the early 2000s when the economy went bad and the funding was no longer available to do that. But it's critical that we proceed with that because we have electrical issues, we have plumbing issues, we have a number of issues in the wings that need to be addressed if we're going to provide a safe work environment for the people who work here and a safe place for the people who come and visit the building. And then beyond that, we need to look at the old portion of the building, which has not had any major upgrade in nearly 70 years that it's been in operation. So there are a number of issues that need to be addressed in the physical plant of the Capitol, and we appreciate the time that you're taking to look into these.
Thank you. For the record, Carl Wilson, committee chair. Question, apart from wear and tear that you would expect in the house wings since the construction back in 1977, what are the changes that have occurred in the use of the wings over time that would necessitate a good hard look at renovation?
Mr. Chair and members of the Commission, Herb can elaborate on this, but the biggest change that has taken place is the nature of the modern office environment itself, with computers and scanners and photocopiers and fax machines, and the heavy electrical demands that those put on a system that was, frankly, the wiring that was done at the time was not done in anticipation of the kinds of loads that we're having to deal with today. We have had instances, in fact, where as we are preparing for a session, a legislator or a staff person flips on one more device in the office and the circuit breakers trip, and we basically shut down that portion of the building until we can get some things brought off of the load for that area. So, and as I said, Herb can elaborate on that, but that I believe is the biggest single thing that is affecting the office place itself right now.
Thank you.
For the record, Herb Colom, facility manager here. It's same things that were installed back in the 70s just don't work right now. Even the basic electrical load, because we're using computers and the way that they can generate magnetic fields, and I won't try and get into the electrical engineering end of it, but the wires and the wiring that was installed in 1977 was not designed for a modern office space, and we need to go right back to the bare bones of the building and put in the right type of infrastructure to support a modern office environment.
Mr. Garber.
Yeah, Mark Garber for the record. I guess I had a question when we were doing the tour. You know, it was obvious that a lot of things have been deferred for a long time, and the workspaces were very crowded, and the carpet was from 1977, I think, in the Senate and the House wings, and stuff just looks like it's, you know, not been kept up. So it made me wonder, in terms of the operating budget, how much money is allocated on a biannual basis for just sort of regular maintenance? What does that really allow you to do, and what would it take to be able to take care of some of that stuff, not necessarily in a capital fashion, but on a, you know, on a regular basis?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, we have sufficient funds to take care of emergencies and routine maintenance items as they come up. Make repairs if something breaks, replace light bulbs, do some basic painting, those type of things. But to go in and do a major renovation is beyond our capability.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, I can give you a specific example of how we had to proceed with one office in the building where the carpeting was probably 30 years old and was frayed and frankly had become a trip hazard. We had to purchase the carpet in one biennium with savings from that biennium, mm-hmm. Store it until the next biennium started, and then we could afford to actually install the carpet. So we do things like that, but it's a piecemeal basis. As things break, we're able to fix them, but there is not much money in the budget to go in and proactively address these things.
So I can follow up. I guess I'm just sort of thinking that through and thinking of the types of recommendations that we might make several months from now. And does it make sense that not everything should be deferred for a once every 25-year kind of capital, you know, project, like you were talking about with the wings? Even things like the carpet, to me, seems like that ought to be done on a more regular basis. And you know, maybe one of the things we could explore as a committee is what would it take in terms of an annual kind of appropriation to be able to do more than just repair the, you know, replace the light bulbs and fix the tears and things like that.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, we have put together, in fact, in our facilities office, a maintenance schedule, which if we were able to come in and do the major work that needs to be done, then we could go on to that periodic maintenance schedule so that those things that should be looked at every 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever the time span would be, we would do that, and then hopefully that would minimize the need every 25 or 30 years to come in and spend the kind of money that we're talking about on a major renovation.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? For the record, Carl Wilson, we're looking at three different things here. At least we all have our own way of dealing with this. I'm looking at this project as three different segments. I suppose it's two when you want to combine the House and the Senate wings as one, and then the main building with the wings constructed, I believe you said, in 1977, and the main building in the early 30s. In taking the tour, I was really surprised at the virtual antiquities I was looking at when we looked at the electrical panel that serves the entire building. That probably made the deepest impression on me. To a degree, the phone system, the heat plant is somewhat aged, but it looks to me like it has been reasonably well maintained throughout time. Cracks in the building and other issues like that, frankly, kind of surprised me. It takes millions of dollars, as we have alluded to bring things back to speed here. Let me ask you about the funding stream for large projects. And if I could ask you, I know that a survey has been made as to what the cost would be to bring the wings up to speed. But yet there is not a mechanism in place right now to know exactly from a dollar standpoint what's required of the main building itself. Could you address the studies out right now? I'd like to get that on record that pertain to the house wings and the cost to renovate, and what would be required to get a feel for what is needed from a dollar standpoint in the main building to renovate it.
Chair Wilson, prior to the 2001 session, we put together a plan to address the renovations needed in the wings, as well as the hearing rooms A through F and the Galleria area. Funding was approved through certificates of participation during the 01 session to proceed with that work. It broke down to about, and Herb can correct me if I'm wrong, about $1.3 million for the hearing room renovation, and then about an additional $11 to $12 million was our estimate at the time to do the wings themselves. We knew that we had to stage these projects because we couldn't do all of them in one interim period. And our plan at that time was that we would do the hearing rooms A through F first, put the infrastructure there so that when we did the wings themselves, we would be able to relocate the offices from the wings temporarily into those hearing rooms. We undertook that project shortly before the 03 session through most of the year of 2002 and completed the renovations in hearing rooms A through F. And we installed that infrastructure. So those are ready now to support office space for a temporary basis when we get when we proceed with the wings. As we further developed the plans for the wings, our budget estimates changed because, frankly, we added some more things that had not been involved in the original estimate, and we ended up at about a $16 million total for the wings, all of which was to be funded through the issuance of COPs, the certificates of participation, which in effect are a medium-range debt instrument that we're able to borrow money, do the project, and then pay that off over typically about a 10-year period. So the payoff was only going to be about $2 million per biennium. But that was all immediately prior to the 03 session, and that's when the economy softened and revenue projections fell dramatically, and it was the decision of the leadership at that time to not proceed with the renovation in the wings themselves. So the last estimate we had was about $16 million, but that is at least a three-year-old estimate right now. Obviously, with the price of steel having done what it's done, and with all of the demands on construction materials on the Gulf Coast right now, any renovation is going to be more expensive than that estimate. Before we can... And I should back up for just a second and say we did about a $500,000 architectural and engineering study prior to the wings project to determine exactly what needed to be done. So that we have. All we need to do with that is review it and bring it up to whatever the current building codes are, which will add some cost, but it won't significantly change that. We need to do that same kind of architectural and engineering study in the old portion of the building so that we are ready at the time, when the time comes to actually go in and do the work, we will have that study in place. So our ballpark estimate is about $500,000 to do that work in the old portion of the building. We frankly don't know the total cost of going in and doing the old building. Our best estimates are $20 to $30 million, perhaps even higher. And all of that is not even including any earthquake upgrading that has been recommended following the 93 earthquake. The entire project of base isolation and doing all of the earthquake work in the building at that time by the engineering firm who looked at it was about $90 million if we were to do that.
Other questions or thoughts? Let me ask you, I have not been around to see other capitals, and that may be a process that we engage in to take a look at a few selected buildings. Is the difficulty that we face with this physical plant similar to what a number of other states face with their capital buildings, in that most of them were constructed quite some time ago?
Chair Wilson, we actually are about the third newest capital in the country. So I suspect that other states have even greater costs when they go in and do their buildings than what we face. But there are several regional examples that we could certainly look at to give us an idea. The Washington State Capitol underwent some major renovation following the earthquake that occurred there. The Utah State Capitol is undergoing renovation right now. So there are... Montana has had some renovation work. Nevada has had some work. So there are a number of fairly regional capitals that could be looked at as examples of what we would encounter.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Garza.
Just one final question. On the financing mechanism with the certificates of participation, is that typically the way these projects would be done by the legislature? And, does that stretch out the impact? You were quoting a number of maybe $2 million a biennium, and so if you were looking at a bigger project, maybe it would be $2 or $3 or $4 million a biennium, but it would still keep it relatively small in comparison to the state budget.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, absolutely, and in fact, the Department of Corrections uses certificates of participation for a lot of their project work, and all of state government. It's a way to use, in effect, the revenues that are generated during that time to actually pay down. So to pay down the principal on the loan, and we actually derive revenue from tenants in the building. The governor, the secretary of state, the treasurer are all tenants. They pay rent to us. Those funds are used right now in building operations, but some amount of that, in addition to some additional appropriation, would be used to pay down the COPs. But that's a very typical method of financing projects of this nature.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate your time today in showing us the facilities, and we will be back to revisit this in probably within a couple of months.
Okay. So thanks very much.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll close this portion of the public hearing, and we will open a portion of our public hearing opportunity for the public to comment on facilities issues. And I see no one signed to do that. Let me just check with those who are here. Anyone? Okay. Seeing none, we will close this portion of the public hearing. And now we will open up the committee discussion on proposal 008, paperless floor sessions, which may sound boring, but I think it'll be anything but. Who would like to testify? Welcome to committee. If you would state your names for the record.
Judy Hall, Secretary of the Senate, for the record. And I'm happy to see that we get to sit up here closer to you. It seemed like a stretch. We're like, hello, I'm out here. My office is responsible for the distribution of most, publishing and distribution of most of the legislative papers that happen during session. We put out the status reports that tell the status of all the bills, the bill sets, all the bills that are printed, and these are all gathered, distributed to the members in their offices on the Senate side. I won't speak for the House. They're distributed to all the members' offices in which they put together bill folders to bring to the floor. Now, I'm going to be answering what I think you want from this when you're saying paperless floor session. There's a lot of different distribution that happens, but most of it depends upon the floor. And the other type of floor distribution we have is like at the end of session, we specifically put everything out on the desks. So any kind of staff measure summaries, any kind of amendments, any reports, the bill sets, everything goes out to the floor desks. And this is a major logjam at the end of session because we're waiting for a committee to meet. The committee meets. Commissioner Wilson knows about this, Gary, you too. The committee meets, and then everybody is very anxious to get whatever that report is, and then it takes us probably another half hour after the committee has done their work in order to copy all this material and throw it out on the desk so that the members can peruse it before they vote, which they usually get 30 seconds to do that. I've had a lot of discussions with my leadership in what we can do to tie in with the system, to try to make this more efficient, economical, and keeping with the protocols, the dignity of the chamber. We've talked a lot about, I would say that our proposed vision for a paperless session, and I'll say that with the caveat that I don't think there is such a thing as paperless. I think we can greatly reduce the paper, would be some type of laptop. I don't even know if laptops, my vision is further down the road than, say, a few sessions. There could be something else out there by that time. I don't envision something they can take away with them. I think it needs to be something built in. I think it also needs to be something that is private. It would be, they would not be able to receive the email. And it wouldn't be something where they could search the internet while they're sitting at their desk. We have many distractions on the floor right now. Our members have started using cell phones on the floor. There's an occasional laptop that shows up on the floor. I know the House has some types of restrictions in their rules for that kind of thing. The Senate doesn't at this point. We are looking at that. But the one thing we don't need to do is add more distractions to what's going on. So we see something that would be a console, possibly. Well, I'll kind of give you an example. I attended a professional development seminar in Springfield, Illinois this fall, and they have a system that is very advanced. It was wonderful. We actually got to sit in the chamber and go through a mock session, and the desk area takes the calendar, whatever's on the calendar for third reading, loads it in the system, and it automatically pops up on the members' laptops. And then they can go through and choose whatever they want. It's kind of a menu system, and they can get the staff measure summary, the fiscal analysis, the revenue analysis, the actual bill, any amendments have been submitted. And it was like a dream come true. I thought I could just see this working so well. Each member has their own laptop. But I see this as something later on could be a console. I don't know what the future holds for us in that type of respect. But I do think it does need to be private. We do really want to keep the integrity of the chamber. And I think right now we have a lot of notes coming and going from the lobby. And every lobbyist out there has their little PDF and their all their other little electronic things going on.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Wilhelm.
I don't want to interrupt, but I can clarify private. By keeping it private, you mean that the only place where it could show up, or the only people that would have access to this information would be the members at their desks? Is that, I'm asking if that's what you're talking about. I don't understand exactly what private means.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms, basically the information is going to be available to the public, but not through their system, not through the members, what they're doing at that particular time. The public, I mean, we are also looking at right now, the Senate has a plan to update our voting system. In the Senate right now, we take an oral roll call. and my staff enters the votes into the system. They appear on the voting board. We don't have any members' names up there, but it does help the public to at least know what we're voting on. But what we want to do is increase public access to the process. So by saying private, I'm not saying that we're trying to exclude anyone. I think it's going to make it easier for them, and we may be able to update that voting board also, so that the public will have a better idea of what we're talking about, how the members are voting, and maybe even subject type areas. There's all kinds of updates that they can do for us. We just haven't been able to do them just because of monetary restraints.
Follow up.
And then the reference to console, are you aware of any other state that uses a built-in console as opposed to a laptop computer?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms, at this point, I don't personally know of any, but Ramona Kennedy was just saying she thinks Florida may be using the console. I don't know what to anticipate, what could be out there in another 5 years.
Well, it's an interesting twist. I haven't thought of it in that way. I've been one that's always been really reluctant. I'm a traditionalist and old-timer and so forth. And when they talk about using laptops on the floor, that's just a big zero to me. It's a negative. And I realize there are other people that are serving on this commission that are just as strongly for using laptops. But I am not in favor of laptops. However, I had never thought about this built-in console that provides the information to the member that, whereas they can poke the proverbial button to get that information up on that console, and if it's restricted so that they can't get on the internet or play games or whatever they're going to do on their laptop, it makes some sense, and it's something that we probably ought to look into. It would be really nice if we could see a demonstration of something like that someplace.
If I might chime in for a moment, for those who are listening on the internet or watching on television, this committee has been charged with bringing forth a number of items to improve the legislative process that have come from legislators themselves and from members of the general public. The idea of using laptops on a desk, and I would join Commissioner Wilhelms, has been a great negative to me because of the supposed mischief that someone can get involved in. Right now, we are precluded from using laptops due to the fact that there's no hard wiring for laptops to hook into on the Senate floor or the House floor, and we're not wireless here yet. We have some technical folks to talk about the fact that we may indeed be going wireless in the Capitol here one of these days, and we'll certainly get into that. But I guess the question that I would have, and Ramona, I think I'll have you introduce yourself. What we're really talking about here is the method of communication that cuts down on the paperwork that legislators receive. It's not uncommon to have a stack of paperwork 8 inches high that accumulates every 30 minutes as we reach the end of session. But one thing that I would like you to address, Ramona, as you join us here, is the communication between legislators and, as an example, lobbyists and the general public during a floor session or a committee hearing has been structured a certain way over time. Why is that? Is it codified in legislation? Is it House rules? And describe what the system is right now that prohibits a legislator, ostensibly, from direct point-to-point communication electronically or otherwise with someone outside the chamber or the committee room during session.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. For the record, my name is Ramona Kennedy. I am the Chief Clerk for the Oregon House of Representatives. And as a direct response to your question, currently in the House of Representatives, we have a rule that prohibits lobbyists from having direct access to the side aisles or to the floor of the House. That limits their capability of direct communication while we are on the floor of the House taking up the calendar and under deliberation of measures. And currently, the only way that a lobbyist can make contact with a member is by sending a note through a receptionist in the front of the lobby area to a member. That note is delivered. Then it is up to the legislator as to whether or not they want to respond to that request to meet them out in the front of the chamber. We also have, as part of our rules, limitations on the use of any kind of electronic devices that would deter or detract from the deliberations of the House. And that specifically means no cell phones on the floor. Those ringing, even vibration, to take that phone call, to have that conversation on the floor would detract from the deliberations of the House. In addition, we have limited the access of laptops if they do detract. However, we have had members who will bring a laptop to the floor. They cannot be connected to the network, but they could run through power that is available. It just wouldn't be connected directly to any of the information that you might find out on the web or within our own intranet systems. We find that members coming in, and we have about a third new membership every session, they come sort of being very technically savvy from their private works, and believe that they are going to gain a lot by having that laptop available to them either in the committee or during session, but quickly that analysis of the use of those pieces become in check because they, after about 2 or 3 weeks, don't bring them anymore. If that answers your question, I would like to maybe just add some prepared remarks, add to Judy's remarks. I've been in the process for about 35 years professionally. I, like Commissioner Wilhelms and Chair Wilson, have been somewhat resistant in providing laptops on the floor of the House. I, too, believe that it would detract from the deliberations and from the exchange between the members as they are deliberating the measures before them. And more importantly, it would detract should they be provided in the committee rooms when they're receiving public testimony. I know that there is a desire to make the Capitol wireless, and I see an advantage to that, not only for the members should they want to potentially bring in additional devices, particularly into their offices right now, to hardwire in is very limited because of the infrastructure we have and the cables that have been run over the last, you know, since 1977. You can only light plug in two computers, and more than that, you're in an overload. And so it's very limiting to the members as to how they can even operate in their personal offices. It's also limiting, I believe, for the public and for the lobby that come in because they don't have direct access to the internet or to the information that might be available to them online. All of our publications are online and readily available. So I believe that wireless is a viable option for the building. However, I'm not sure that we would then not have to pass rules of, both in the House and the Senate to sort of limit that use of those devices while we are in deliberation. I would suggest that an intermediate step to coming to a paperless sort of environment, and again, I concur with Judy, I don't know that we ever can get to paperless, is to look very seriously at the on-demand printing capabilities. Currently, right now, we print an enormous amount of paper because the only way we get that to the public and the only way we get that to the membership is by hard copy. But I do believe that there is some value in looking at putting in some technology that would provide for us to do hard copies in limited numbers and then allow the membership, the public, the lobby, to go to a print-on-demand capability where it would be easily accessible throughout the building, maybe at kiosk areas where they would be able to pull up a bill number and print that bill, pull up a staff measure summary or a fiscal revenue impact statement, and then push the print button and get what they need as opposed to picking up a full packet that we do right now for our subscribers. I don't know exactly how many subscribers we have, but I would suggest that it's probably in the neighborhood of 200 or 300 people. They get a full stack of every bill we introduce, and they stand at the recycling bins, and they get rid of everything they don't want. I would suggest most, over half of those bills go into the recycling bin immediately because they're not really what they want, but they don't know what they want, so they get it all.
Ramona, if I could stop you for just a moment, and we'll resume with you shortly. In my period of time, and Judy, this is addressed to you too, in my period of time in the legislature from essentially 1998 through about 2002, technology changed a lot during that time. There were some legislators who had BlackBerries or texting pagers that could collect email messages. But it was really before the texting days for cell phones and direct point-to-point communication. I guess the question I would have for you both is, I mean, that technology is here, and people are pushing the envelope and using it. How do you intend, or what is your experience up to this point in stopping legislators from engaging in point-to-point communication while they're in the in session? What's happening there?
Chair Wilson, what I would say on the Senate side, the Senate has always had our rules be flexible. We do not have specific rules to say no cell phones, no PDAs, no laptops, anything like that. It's, we have one general rule that the president presides. The president is, has the, that ultimate authority to keep order in the chamber. This last session is the first time I've really seen us have real blatant use of cell phones. I really have not seen that up until that point. The members have been conscientious about not having them ring during session, but I do see them at the back of the chamber, which is close to our telephone booths. We have telephone booths that have been there since the Capitol was built, and those are at the back of the chamber, and the members are welcome to use the telephone booths, and a lot of members go in there to use their cell phones. But I've seen it become increasingly taken away from the integrity. It's very distracting. I think probably what I would say is I'm not going to stand in the way of the train that's coming because I know this is coming down the road for us, and I just as soon get on board and develop the policy and say, here's how it will be used. That's why I think if we went to some type of a private type system where they can't, during session, these are the rules. This is what you're going to do, and this is how you access this.
Apart from decorum, what are rules like the House rules getting at in prohibiting legislators from direct communication with a lobbyist during actual floor debate? That is point-to-point communication, as opposed to physically arising from your desk at the behest of a note that you've received from the outside, going outside the chamber to talk.
Chair Wilson, I don't believe that we have in place right now a rule that prohibits a member that may have the capability of text messaging and receiving or sending a text message. I think that the intent of the rule when it was written that prohibits the use of cell phones during official legislative business was directed at probably the verbal communication. Although I would suggest that since it says cell phones are prohibited, one could extend that to text messaging. However, you know, it becomes the responsibility of the member themselves to take those rules seriously and adhere to that rule. I suspect that if another member saw that happening, they certainly could call them to order. Typically what will happen is either my sergeant-at-arms will notice that or I will notice that, and we would politely remind them that, you know, that is against the rules. We have allowed the members to go to the side aisle or to the back of the chamber into the phone booth and use their cell phones. The reason being that we have phone booths in the back, and there's very little difference between them having a cell phone and making an outgoing call or using our phone booths, which have been there since
probably back into the 50s. However, there's not been the capability of incoming calls into those phone booths. They can do only outgoing calls. And so that has sort of prohibited them making that direct contact to the lobbyist or whatever. But, you know, I'm not naive to think that, you know, if there's not an exchange there. Mm-hmm. I just really would hope that they would adhere to the rules.
One of the issues that this commission is looking at is undue influence in the political process. Let me ask you both what you think would happen if suddenly the rules that had controlled access over time between the legislator on the floor and the lobbyist on the outside, what would the system look like? Where would it go if suddenly there were no rules and it was unlimited point-to-point access electronically with people on the outside during floor sessions?
Chair Wilson, I think it would be utter chaos. I like Ramona, have been here for quite a number of years, and I think what I've been observing over the last several years is younger members coming in that want to multitask. And so there's a lot more going in and out of the chamber, talking with the lobbyists, and I think it's a symptom of the 21st century. I think that's where we're going. But I think I thought when you first were framing your question, I thought maybe you were going to say, what if we completely cut off contact? and I thought, you know, the members wouldn't like it, the lobby wouldn't like it, and that would be chaos. But if you in turn the other way, I also think that would be chaos.
Right. Thank you, Judy. Ramona, that subject?
Yeah. Chair Wilson, I believe that if we were to allow total access to the members during deliberations, I think it would just be one more mark against the integrity of the ability of the members to be making their decisions on their own. We pride ourselves in having a citizen legislature. To have direct access, I think, would make it have the appearance, if not the reality, of total influence. And again, as we take that down that path, you know, influenced by those who may have given campaign contributions, you know, it just becomes so more visible. And I think it will detract from the deliberations. In Oregon, we spend very little time on the floor of the House compared to other legislatures. All of our work is done in committees. And they bring those committee recommendations to the final decision by the total membership. And the deliberation of our House is limited to, at the beginning of session, maybe an hour two. And at the end of session, we find ourselves on the floor more often because that's when all the measures are coming forward. But they've had that total review in committee. Right now, the committees are more relaxed in the access of the lobbyists and the interested parties getting to the committee membership. But I do believe that if we provide that total access to the floor of the House, I don't know the value at that point in time that brings it to some sort of decision.
Sure. Thank you for your answers. And I'm sorry to be hogging all the time here, but I've got an unsatiable appetite on this particular subject. Rich Inglis is here, and Rich, I'm going to have you talk in just a moment to talk about the technological end of this. But so getting back to, say, texting in committee, it would be possible then currently for a lobbyist sitting in the audience in a committee room to text a legislator sitting in committee and give that legislator a question to ask an opposing testifier, you know, one that they're afraid the legislator's not going to ask. This is the perfect question in their mind, so they could text right now, according to rules now, they could text a legislator sitting up at the platform with the question, the next question to ask the one testifying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, let me go to the committee for just a moment. Follow-up questions, sir. Commissioner Wilhelm.
Well, it's more of a kind of an observation, I guess. Having served a few years in the legislature and having served a few years as a lobbyist, I think it's totally all right for the legislator to be able to communicate outgoing during a legislative session. because we've always done that. We get up and walk out in the lobby if we have to. And there's nothing, I don't see anything wrong with that. Or go back into the phone booth and make a call, or take your cell phone outside and call. But it was never disruptive on the floor other than getting up and walking outside and maybe getting a note back in. But I think it would be absolutely chaotic, as the word was used, to allow incoming while you're on the floor deliberating. And I really think Ramona hit on it, and I'm sure that Judy agrees as well, that around here we do the working committee. And you have to take the responsibility, if you're a legislator, to be prepared when you come to the floor to vote on the issues. That doesn't mean there isn't occasionally going to be a last-minute question that comes up that you've got to go get more information on. That happens. Sometimes that causes us to set a bill over to the next day, potentially, or a week, whatever it happens to be. But to excuse people from the responsibility of deliberating in committee and coming to the floor prepared is something that I believe this commission needs to be on guard for. That's something that we absolutely need to protect against happening. As part of the problem now is that we're not, well, in my opinion, we're not making people accountable for their actions and their conduct of business here, and that would be one of the flaws I see in the business. But just to reiterate, I think outgoing's good, incoming's a no-no, and I'm really interested in this console business. I can see where that console where you have a private, restricted source of information would be a real value to the legislator and probably wouldn't be disruptive if it just dealt with the issue that you've got under consideration at the time.
Chair Wilson, could I respond to his interest in the console? I have seen the console being used, and it was while in Florida. Now, I don't know if they're still in a console process now, but the console that I saw then would push the information to the membership, and it was similar to a dumb terminal, basically, or a video screen that the desk would push the measure before the members to that console, and then you could hit either if you want to look at the bill or the staff measure summary, the fiscal or the revenue impact statement for that measure before the House at that time. And it was used a lot because they do amend on the floor. And sometimes those amendments, having not been reviewed by anyone, that the member, instead of trying to get all those copies, hard copies in front of the membership, they would then push them, those amendments by that console concept to the desks as opposed to having to print them. So I see the value in that. I would, however, suggest that in Oregon we give 2 to 3 days notice before our member before our bills are taken up. And I would hate to see members rely on that information in front of them if that's the first time they want to view that information. So I don't know that it limits the amount of paper that we have being printed, but I do think it's another way of getting that information on the desks for the members to see it that way.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Burns.
Bridget Burns for the record. I think there are some important questions that are kind of coming through my mind around this, such as what our role in this discussion is. I mean, is it our role to regulate what the legislators are going to be doing, or is it our role to create facilities that they can self-impose their own rules? Because from what I've seen, the rules and regulations we're talking about were self-imposed from the beginning, and it is a self-regulating body. And so I just don't want to be going so far as to, you know, impose things from the outside, but at the same time, you know, they're going to take care of it themselves. I'm also curious as to whether or not we know it is strictly lobbyists who are the ones who are engaging with them. Is it possibly constituents? Is it staff members who can't get on the floor? Because if so, I mean, there is the other side of the issue, which is that also aids in the healthy discourse and debate that we're having on the floor. If it's an important bit of information or if it's a fact that needs to get into the discussion, is it costing that much? Is it that much of a disadvantage for us to have a text message sent? Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious about the level of distraction of a page carrying in a note versus a text message? Mm-hmm. Is it because it's the technology that makes it uncomfortable for us? Is it because it's not historical and because we believe that that's we have notions of what is acceptable? Because it can be just as distracting, or it could be as little of distraction, depending on the medium.
Okay. Thank you. Care to address any of those?
Chair Wilson and Commissioner Burns, I share that view and those questions and concerns that you just expressed. As far as the pages, the floor staff that do this, we do have rules, protocol that we go through that, so that they're as not as distracting as it possibly could be. So if, especially, I think probably our rules are similar to the House in that respect. If someone is speaking at the time, the pages are not allowed to go up that aisle or to interrupt anything. So a lot of times I kind of think there's some messages that probably do get delayed just because of that, because you don't know who's going to be speaking at any particular time. So a text message would be a faster, easier way to do it. It's just I could see abuse coming from that specific kind of thing. And it's kind of like the member gets the text message. I mean, just like they get a note now, it says, please meet me in the lobby. And it's up to the legislator whether they do that or not. I kind of see with the text message, it's going to give you a lot more information, like you need to vote this way or this question should be asked or this, whatever they're going to say. I would not be in favor of the text messages coming in that way. They still could write a note to get that extra information. There are so many different ways to get the information on the floor. On the Senate side, the staff has full access to the floor. And I don't see the need for the extra assault on our custom of protocol and decorum.
Thank you. Ramona, any?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Burns, I appreciate the question. I want to make sure that maybe I lay out what the decorum and the protocols on the floor of the House are. I would suggest that they are not, the members themselves are not sitting at their desks and with their hands folded listening intently to the debate at hand. The House has been sort of known as being a little bit raucous. And a lot of people like that type of decorum. It's the opportunity for the members themselves, when they don't have an opportunity to sit on the same committee with some members, to actually have a conversation and talk about other issues that are coming before them. So, again, it's not as if this is a very, and I say this very respectfully, a polite exchange in debate. However, when it is a serious topic, they do sit down and they do give their undivided attention. Again, our pages are restricted as to when they can deliver a note, and we go as far as that if a member is speaking on that side of the chamber, that no notes can be delivered, even more strict than the Senate side. Staff does have access. One staff person has access to the floor at any given time if they need to come down and give some information to their members. Typically, they will already be sitting with their member during the floor sessions. And there's rules that are far more strict on the staff than on the membership themselves. Again, text messaging has not really rose to the surface. However, that technology is here. It is becoming increasingly easier. I would suggest that text messaging would take the undivided attention of a member away from what's happening on the floor, no matter what they're text messaging about. And unless it's quick and brief, you know, I can see where a member loses track about even what measure they're on and could then push the incorrect button when they're voting. You know, we move pretty quickly on the floor of the House when there's no debate on a particular measure, and it's not unusual for you to be voting on a bill every 30 seconds, every 45 seconds. And so if you're engaged in a text messaging process, you're going to lose track of where you're at. And then we find ourselves at the end of that day allowing, with a rule suspension, for those members to change those votes because they cast them incorrectly. So I would like to keep them on focus as much as possible.
I know that kind of thing happens even on a good day.
Oh, yes.
It typically does. Okay, thank you. I'd like to have Rich Inglis speak, and the reason we're talking in the direction that we are today is because of wireless technology. And if we have wireless technology and legislators have laptops, they're able to receive messages from the outside, from just in this case, another lobbyist with a laptop sitting up in the gallery. You know, it's not too far afield of physically dropping a message from the gallery onto the floor. And that's a no-no. Rich, if you would join us, I know you have been patiently listening to us for about 30 minutes and probably wanted a number of times to interject something here. I'm sure there are some things that you do want to address. And so if you would introduce yourself for the record, and we've given you a lot of targets here to shoot at for the moment. We certainly are not putting a black mark on wireless technology because I you know, obviously haven't pulled a committee, but I think almost all of us are very interested in pursuing wireless technology in this building. With that said, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Chair, for the record, I'm Rich Inglis. I'm the information systems manager here at the legislature and the technology guy for the legislature. So, yes, I have some interest in this topic. But I'd like to say right at the start that information systems' role and my role in this organization is to support the business areas and whatever needs to be done from a business process. That's what we'd like to do. I don't have an agenda personally, and my department doesn't, for introducing technology that's not needed or not wanted in the organization. I think it's very important as we move forward to take a good, solid look at each initiative as it comes up and decide on its own merits, is it appropriate to do so, to move technology into a new area. I guess my personal thoughts are if we look down the road many, many years, I think there are some efficiencies that can probably be utilized in chambers, maybe even the committee process, as we do in other staff areas in the organization. But I think it's a matter of timing, and it should be absolutely driven by the business process. And we shouldn't be going to new technology for technology's sake. So that I guess that would be the main message I want to impart. I'd like to talk just briefly also about the idea of the private systems that Judy brought up and we talked a little bit about. I think by private, we could differentiate on systems based upon who has access to them. In a private system, I think we're just talking about people inside the building using it, much like we have many of our other systems. We have a desk system, for instance, that Judy and Ramona can use and their departments can use, but really no one else can use that system or components of it unless they have been granted access by these two ladies. So this could be structured in that same fashion. I think that's the other legislatures that have been successful in doing things like this have structured it that way so that it is used only in the area where it's needed and not in other areas, specifically not in other areas. So the public doesn't have access and other people don't have access. And I guess I'd like also to comment on just the technology to be used. I know that in this organization, over the years, there's been a lot of discussion about laptops in particular. And our department, we aren't wedded to any particular technology. And I think that, well, one of the things that we do on any given project when we're trying to do a business automation project is we like to look at the technologies that are out there now and that are proven, but we also like to look at what are the other technologies that are coming down the road and see what would work in each particular situation. In this, you know, there are several technologies that could be used. Laptops are only one, and laptops may not be the right thing. As you may know, there are small computers now that are almost the size of your fist, very small. Some manufacturers are making a computer so that you can have your display terminal and actually the computer portion of it fits on the back. So it's very different than some of the things we've had in the past. And I don't mean to imply that those are the right technologies here, but there are many technologies that could be considered in this kind of thing. And You know, laptops are just one way to go. Some other legislatures have also used tablet PCs, but you know, they're the same thing. They have application in certain areas, maybe not here, not in this particular application. So I guess those are the things I'd like to impart to you, is that there are many things to consider. I guess I'd like to put one other plug in, and that is we are currently, this biennium, working on the remainder of our technology transition program. And we're just about, we hope to finish that this biennium. We're doing a bill drafting project. I would hope that we could wait to do anything in terms of paperless or chamber automation or anything like that until after we've got all of our base systems in place, and that would be at least after this biennium before we would consider moving forward with this. This could be potentially a large project to determine the business applications, what they need to do. There is software to be written. It's not a matter of just putting a laptop on a desk. There's a lot of thought that needs to go into how should the systems run something of this magnitude, and then the development of those systems could take a great deal of time. So it's a fairly large project actually to do this, and I think the timing is not right now. I think the timing will be right someday, but not at this time.
Thank you. Any questions? Commissioner Garber.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner Mark Garber, for the record. I guess I'm in just kind of listening to the whole conversation, and I wanted to maybe bring it back to the beginning. And what problem are we trying to solve when we say we want to go paperless? I understand, you know, maybe we don't want big stacks of paper, and there's a lot to go through. And when you print out a bill with all the amendments, it's, you know, a lot to look through. But electronically, you still have to do the same thing. So, you know, what do we actually accomplish? You know, what advantage is there to the legislator for having a paperless system? And anyone who wants to answer, I suppose.
I'll follow you.
Okay, well, from, again, Rich Inglis and Commissioner Garber, I think that's mainly a business question. It's a paper, a question of how do you work when you're at the desk in the chamber. From a technological standpoint, we could make information available. We can make documents available on a device, and you could actually thumb through several different kinds of paper, if you will, several documents. So that if you're discussing a bill, for instance, you could look at many other documents that pertain to that bill. So you could potentially have access to a lot of information without having to thumb through a lot of paper. But many people don't like to look at information that way. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to me to being a business decision of how does the chamber need to operate, and how do the legislators like to see information. That's one possibility. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber. I agree with Rich. I'm one of those dinosaurs that still likes to print something out to read it. I don't like to read it off of a screen. My vision would be to have printers at the back of the chamber so that the members could print something out on demand if that's what they wanted to do. I think if you've ever been lost in a sea of paper, you might really, you know, understand why I think we want to go this direction. We're not going to be totally paperless. But I think all these file folders that the staff dragged to the floor, if it was already on the desk, and then they could come to the desk and print it out, and they could have it in hard copy, or they could read it off the computer. Mm-hmm. I think it would make their lives so much easier if staff do not empty their little inboxes on an hourly basis during session. They will have the 8-inch stack, the 12-inch stack of paper. So I can see this being a real help to the legislators, and that's what we're here for. As Rich said, to support the business, I am too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Commissioner
Wilhelms. Yes, thank you. Maybe this is just restating the obvious, but often I recall, and I recall it as recently as last session, a member said, well, I thought we were voting on C engrossed. And now you should be telling me I voted on D engrossed, and, you know, I wouldn't have voted yes. Well, theoretically, this would eliminate that, because everybody would be looking at the bill, the current bill. And so I think it would help the legislator in that way. And it would also eliminate the excuse that, well, I never saw it. You know, I never got a piece of paper. And you will always find that there are a few that, and maybe they did, I don't know, but in this case, they would have it because it would be right there on the screen in front of them. And that's why I'm kind of intrigued by this system. And I'd like to investigate it further. And Mr. Chairman, I would recommend that maybe our staff go to the NCSL folks and try to determine which states, hopefully closer than Florida, might, or if we could hurry up and do it in the wintertime. How about, I'd really like to take a look at one of these things and see how it works and get a reaction from some of the folks that use it to see what they think.
Commissioner Burns.
I think that if it's a general consensus that right now is not necessarily the time for us to adopt it, and we also know the expense is going to be really high, we know it's going to be a hard decision to make, especially in light of, you know, budget problems that may be around the bend, maybe we have to start thinking a little bit more creatively about how we approach this problem, whether it be we construct rules that really enable the climate that we're looking for. I mean, if we recognize that text messaging is already happening, if some people are bringing in their laptops, I mean, do we create rules that don't stifle the legislators but create the best possible environment? Do we just engage it where it's at? Or do we go with the laptop angle? Or do we just go the angle of, if you can afford a laptop, great, we'll get wireless, that's it. You know, I mean, neither of these is the answer, but I think we have to start thinking more creatively about how we approach the problem, because it seems like we have four different problems, which, from what I've got, is that people want to communicate, and we want them to communicate discreetly. We have too much paper, which is obviously a physical burden, the environmental considerations, and also, which I don't know if this is something that, how we can navigate this issue, but the kind of irresponsible behavior or behavior that's unbecoming of the chamber. And so do we tackle all of these, and do we necessarily think this is the angle by which we try to attack it? Because I think that if we're low on money, maybe it's just creating rules or something like that.
Thank you. Commissioner Garber.
I'd like to add one more consideration to Commissioner Burns' list there, and that would be, several times when we talked about the console, the word private was used, and you know, that the public wouldn't have access to it, and it would be just for the legislators. And I understand that what you're saying is we're going to provide the information that they need to know, you know, in order to make an educated vote on a particular bill. But if built into that system is any way for, you know, legislators to communicate with each other and that sort of thing, you know, I just, that makes me a little nervous when we say, well, the public's not going to have access, and it's going to be just this sort of private realm for the legislators. So whatever we would do, I would want to build in some protections for the public there too.
Chair Wilson, may I respond to Commissioner Garber? I may have misused the word private. I was not intended to exclude anyone from the public. The public will still have the identical information. They just, like right now, they're not part of our desk system. Mm-hmm. And when we're taking votes and that kind of thing, they're not part of that system, but they certainly can listen to us on the internet. Mm-hmm. They could watch us on TV, and all of the papers that we're talking about are available to them both on the internet and through our distribution center. So mm-hmm. I don't see any kind of a change in that. I just see the system still being specifically for the senator's use. Mm-hmm. No one would be able to get into our system mm-hmm. as far as the security would have to be that way, so that our records are accurate. And
right. Thank you. Ramona, I think you had something to say. And then, Rich, I want to ask, I've got a question for you from me.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Wilson. In response to Commissioner Garber's initial question on the paperless, mm-hmm. I do believe that we're always going to need paper. There's different learning styles by all the members, and some are going to want that paper well in advance of making their decisions. Some may want to have it online so that they have access to it in the chamber. In addition to just the information that's provided by staff and the printed measures, amendments, et cetera, they also put in those file folders communications from their constituency. And so all of that comes to the floor with them when they're getting ready to cast their vote. Mm-hmm. However, I would suggest in most cases the members review that the night before they come to the floor, so they are prepared to vote. I do believe, however, again, that there is some value at looking to printing on demand, because right now we're guessing how much paper we need and how many copies of measures and amendments and status reports we need. And sometimes we find those huge amount of measures still left on the shelves down in distribution center because there wasn't that demand. I've actually suggested such things as maybe not printing the large numbers of measures at introduction, but wait until they are scheduled for a public hearing, meaning that, you know, about a third of the measures introduced in any given session are see final enactment. And so, again, instead of us having to print anywhere from 750 to 1,000 copies of every measure introduced, we wouldn't print those until such time as they're scheduled for a hearing. So that would be then give the signal that the measures are actually going to be taken under consideration and only print the minimal amounts prior to that. The status reports, we do cumulative, so every day you get a huge publication initially of every measure, and then the next day you get that huge publication again. We may want to start cumulative right at the get-go, so you get your Monday cumulative, and then you just do supplements of what's happened on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Change our printing schedules, reducing the amount of paper we use. And again, looking at on-demand printing, that if there is a measure that is needed, that you can go to the distribution center or the members in their personal offices can go to a view page where that they could print in their offices that information only and not print everything that they think and not receive those stacks of papers that sit in those file boxes that never get filed because they never need them. Again, I think we could look at those business practices seriously, make some changes in those business practices, and it really wouldn't affect the deliberations of the House, but it would lessen the amount of paper. And in addition, I believe that it would detract to have maybe printers at the back of the chamber. I'm not sure that I would want to review that. But again, back to Gary's comment, to push the information to the members is to really limit what those consoles can do. It would put everybody seeing the same things and choosing on that measure what they would want to see, whether it's the fiscal, the revenue, the staff measure summary, or the final version of the measure. And I think that that would be very useful for the members that don't want to bring those file folders to the floor.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? All right, thank you. I am not sure of what we want to do at this point. Rich, are there any things that you would like at least relating to a paperless floor session? We'll have you back, obviously, for the wireless technology portion here in a bit. But anything more about this for me?
Rich Inglis again, Information Systems Manager. I guess my parting words would be, as a technology person, I recognize that technology is a very powerful thing, and I think over the coming years, we're going to have people who like to use technology, and so I think as we look far down the future, there are uses that can be made here in the legislature. I would echo Gary's comments about I think that there are people, it can help the process to have everybody looking at the same thing and have that information. It would help the desks control the process somewhat if done right and done in the right manner. So to me, as I look out there in the future, I see more automation in all areas, and I think this may be one of them. This is one that I think requires great care in how it's done, and the timing, again, I think is ultra important. But we're prepared if the business need is there.
Okay, thank you. All right, anyone else want to testify on this particular issue, paperless floor sessions? Okay, seeing none, we will gavel out of this portion of the public hearing, and we will open a work session. And committee, going to work session allows us to actually, it gives us the possibility of forwarding these proposed ideas to the full committee. I'm not sure we're going to do that today. But as long as we have a head of steam up on wireless technology, I think we want to change the order here today in the time we have remaining, and I'd like to go ahead and pick up proposal 147. I'm not sure who has submitted this. It could have been a member of the public, it could have been a legislator or a staffer, but the idea is to switch to wireless technology in the entire capital. That is their words, not ours. So in that vein, I'd like to go ahead and have Rich come back. And Rich, if there's anyone you want to bring with you, feel free. So we are opening a work session on proposal number 147. Yes. And let me, in fact, Marjorie, if you would go ahead and mention what you just brought my attention to, and if you would like to talk about the preliminary staff summary for proposal 147, I'd appreciate that.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at your desk, hopefully you've been able to review the preliminary staff summaries that we prepared for each one of these proposals that we're going to hear today. Depending on the recommendation, depending on other surrounding issues, I will try to put some background, not necessarily extensive background, but pull some pieces together, and then identify all of the bullet points for whatever proposal we're discussing. So not just what's on the agenda, but everything that's in the actual proposal list, and then gather any sort of information that I have in my files related to any one of these proposals. So again, this one's a little sparse, but that's what your preliminary staff summaries are for each of the proposals. And then after the committee meeting today, I'll summarize what your issues discussed were in committee. If you take some sort of action, I'll identify that action and whatever vote you came out with today, and then if you make a recommendation to the full commission, then that will also be included, and this will be forwarded to the full commission for their consideration. What I pointed out to Chair Wilson was a letter that the co-chairs of the commission and Chair Wilson signed on to regarding IT, the IT Governance Board and wireless technology. The IT Governance Board recently met, and they were considering prioritizing all of the IT projects. I'm sure Rich would be willing to talk to you more about that. But we were encouraged, as the co-chairs and the chair of the Facilities Committee, were encouraged to send a letter to the IT Governance Board to encourage them to raise wireless issues higher on the priority list.
Okay, thank you. It won't be my practice as a committee chair to read a staff measure summary to the public, but this is only two sentences long, so if I may do that. The trend in technology is to move to wireless communication, although people can use this technology to access electronic information without being tied down to a particular location, and infrastructure must be developed for people to use. That is composed by Marjorie, our staff, in response to the title that was given to us of this proposal by a member of the public or a legislator or a staffer, and that is to switch to wireless technology in the entire capital. Okay, Rich, to you, please.
Chair Wilson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rich Anglis. I'm the Information Systems Manager for the legislature, and as you requested, we'd like to give you a bit more information about what we're doing with wireless technology, and we have a project going on currently, and we'd like to give you a status update on that particular project. And I've asked Vicki Bermeer to join us today. She's the project manager of the project that is underway and the one that may be coming, and she's also our operations supervisor in information systems here. There are two projects that we'd like to talk about, and as Marjorie mentioned, we've just discussed these in the IT Governance Board meeting, and we went through a prioritization process. So the two projects are, we have a wireless analysis project that has been going on for several months, and that is a technical project to look at, if we install wireless in the Capitol, what should it look like, and determine the specifications and just how it should be done. The second project is it's a follow-on project, and to actually do that. So we've titled it at this point Capital Wireless Access Project, and it's actually to implement wireless around the building whenever the funding and the approval are there to go ahead with that. So we would not start on that project and don't plan to until leadership officially says, yes, go ahead with that, and makes the funding available. In the process, in the prioritization process, these two projects came out very high. I think the members of the governance board did read the communication and acted accordingly. The wireless analysis project is actually prioritized as number two on the list behind bill drafting, and the capital wireless access project is number four on the list, assuming that it would follow on then behind the wireless analysis project. So I'd like to have Vicki give you an update about what are we doing on the project. She's been managing this project for several months, the wireless analysis project, and she can kind of give you the status of where we are today.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Vicki Bermeer. I'm the network supervisor for the legislature, and I'm managing the wireless analysis project. Wireless in the Capitol has two components. One is public access to the Internet, which would be provided wirelessly, and the second would be access to the legislative network, which would be available to legislators and legislative staff. And that would be wireless, and it would be in addition to the wired network that is in place now. In January of 2005, a brief high-level assessment was done to determine what equipment would be needed, what would it take, and what would be the cost of installing wireless in the Capitol. That was a very brief three-day study. Starting in March, we took the topic up again in more detail. And the first thing we did was look at what would wireless be used for in the Capitol. And we interviewed staff and representatives of departments throughout the building. Potential uses that were identified were, again, public access to the Internet. And for the private wireless network, that would be access to existing applications that are on the wired network that's in place now. And this would be in addition to and not instead of the wired network. And also, there are no plans at this time to write applications that would be more amenable to a small form factor like a laptop or a handheld device that would be your wireless device. We have also drafted technical and security requirements so that if we proceed with implementing wireless, we know technically how we want it to work and what the security provisions need to be. And we've been exploring cost in more detail. Last week, we had a wireless site survey conducted of the Capitol. Technicians went around the building with wireless equipment and tested where the signal would go and if we put an access point in this corner versus that corner, which is optimal. And we're waiting for a report from them. That will basically design the wireless network in the Capitol. It'll tell us how much we would need to spend on devices. And then we would turn that over to facilities who would figure out what it'll cost to pull the cable, which needs to run to the wireless access points. And at that point, we'll have a budget for a wireless system in the Capitol. That should be available by the end of January, and the analysis project will wrap up in February. We are also beginning to draft the plan for the Capitol Wireless project that would implement it so that if we are given the go-ahead to implement it, we're ready to do that as soon as we have that go-ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Questions? Commissioner Burns.
Was it ever considered to, Mr. Burns for the record, to go out to bid and have a company like, say, T-Mobile come in and install it and pay for it actually in especially the hall outside the Senate and the House chambers? And then having a low-cost fee set up so that they could set up the secure server and we would be able to track who's using it and, you know, then they would defray the cost. Was that ever considered or is that not something we would want to do?
Commissioner Burns, we have looked at those kinds of options, and several other states have partnered with other businesses to, to do something like that. And that's still an open question, I think, at this point, whether or not we can partner with someone to defray the cost and actually put up a great network. One of the things that's of concern to us, though, is that, as Vicki mentioned, we have infrastructure here that we need to work with. This will augment our existing network. And from a technical perspective, it would be a great thing for us to use the same technologies and, in fact, the same vendors, if we could possibly do that, that run our current network. And so we are looking at it from that perspective right now. But I understand we're not doing overtures to outside businesses, but that is being done at this point, seeing if maybe even those vendors that sell the same products could help with this initiative. but our strong preference is to stay within that same technology realm. It just would make everything more secure and just a better fit if we can do that.
Commissioner Wilhelms.
Thank you, Gary Wilhelms. The January, February dates that you threw out there, that would indicate that we could get this thing installed before the next session of the legislature then, if the approvals were all made and if the appropriate appropriation was made by the emergency board, I assume. It's a question.
Vicki Bermeer, Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms. Yes, that's true. It takes about 6 or 7 months.
Well, it would take that long to get it installed.
I believe so because of the time to pull the wire.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Good point. I had a second question.
Go ahead.
Trying to remember what it was. When we talk about a wireless project in the Capitol, now, are we talking about the entire Capitol would be blanketed so that when I carry my device with me wherever in the building, anywhere, I would be able to have the same wireless access as opposed to having hotspots in the building?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms, yes, except not in the tower. So if you wanted to take a tower tour with your laptop, you would not have a wireless signal up there. But anywhere else in the building, yes.
Very good. Thank you.
Commissioner Burns.
I know Bridget Burns, for the record, and we've mentioned this before, that it's going to cost us millions of dollars to make the entire Capitol wireless just because of how the structure is built. I would encourage the idea of hotspots. I really do think that we could be strategic about the placement of them and make it so that it would be accessible and open and we could accomplish the goals that we have regarding wireless technology and not have to incur massive costs. And I don't know, there is some concern about, for instance, the office floors, making those wireless. I mean, that just wouldn't necessarily be as safe as the ground wired, or is that not true?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Burns, wired is more secure than wireless. We will do everything we can to make the wireless secure, but just by the nature of the technology, wired is more secure. Related to the cost, our January figures came in at about $650,000 to do wireless throughout the Capitol and provide legislators with a laptop each. Without the laptops, it's about $400,000 to do the entire Capitol.
If I might, Commissioner Burns, also, this is one of those projects where there's a full gradation of cost possible. We have been looking at installing wireless throughout the entire Capitol because that's what we were asked to look at. And in the process that Vicki mentioned, when we talked with all of the business users in the Capitol, that's what they said that they would like. It is possible to scale it back, to certain areas, and the cost goes accordingly. So it's possible to do that. It again comes down to the business process. What is the business process and what's the need inside the Capitol? And at this point, the need has been that we've been talked with about is to put it everywhere so that people can travel around and do their business wherever they need to. But there is a full range of possibilities there.
I'm a wireless user. I mean, I depend, Bridget Burns, for the record, solely on wireless, and it just doesn't seem it's ideal. It would be cool to have the whole Capitol wireless, but I don't see it as completely necessary because I don't see myself walking up and down the stairs with my laptop typing away, and there are certain places in the building which just simply aren't comfortable for people to be utilizing the wireless network. So it would just seem logical that we would, ideally focus on a few areas where we believe folks gather and congregate, and it would be helpful for them to have access to outside communication. But in addition, have we considered the possibility of, have there been any organizations or corporations that have been interested in donating the laptops?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Burns, not that I'm aware of. We haven't, we've talked about laptops a number of times over the last several years, and I'm trying to remember when we first started. I don't recall that initiative. We looked primarily just at the cost every time we looked at it, and I don't believe we looked into is someone going to donate all those computers. So it came out as a budget issue primarily each time.
Would it be a problem for us to consider that as a possibility, using some creative corporate public-private partnerships to defray the cost, or is it something we would philosophically object to?
I don't think there, at least from my standpoint, no philosophical objection. It is probably going to become, it gets into the contribution issue at that point, I would think, to legislators by whoever provides that. And that, of course, I guess becomes philosophical in itself. But that would, frankly, be the only thing I can think of initially.
Bridget Burns, because we have those kind of public-private partnerships within our educational system, and we've managed to make it so that it's, you know, transparent and it's open and it doesn't seem, you know, problematic from, you know, a public perspective. And mm-hmm. especially when we're in a situation where we'd like to do as much as possible, this seems like we could pursue some creative angles.
I would think that some corporation, for the record, Carl Wilson, I would think that you could certainly find someone who would be willing to furnish legislators with laptops, I would think.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Wilhelms.
I would be one that would speak against making that kind of an arrangement with a corporation. A corporation contribution to the education community is totally acceptable. A corporation's contribution to the legislative process or the legislature or a legislator is looked at quite a bit differently. And I don't think we need to open up that wound. I think that it's a nice idea, and if you go there, you're going to generate a lot more questions and opportunity for misconception of what's going on than if you just leave it alone. But to back that up, I didn't know that part of the project was to give everybody a laptop. I don't think that's necessary. And my vision of wireless network in the Capitol would be if I were working in a building and I was walking around with this thing, that I would be able to access the Internet and take my voicemail messages wherever I am in the building. That's not carrying my laptop under my arm walking around. It's this thing. And I know more and more people are using these things now. And I would think that that's where the value would be. But I still don't believe that we need to provide the device as part of this project to the legislators. They receive expense money to cover themselves for things like this. Most everybody I know has got a little different idea about what kind of a device they want to use. They don't all want to use the same thing. So I would also be against, I think, the part of the project that would provide the device to the legislator.
Chair Wilson, if I might comment, and Commissioner Wilhelms, I should clear this up. We haven't been asked to look at purchasing laptops as part of the project. We've been talking with leadership about what should wireless look like, and they have indicated don't include devices at this point. So the thing that we're looking strongly at this point is just providing the wireless, and everyone provides their own device.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman, this thing is not, I think it's almost more for the public than it is for the legislature. The reason that we got hot on this was because people sitting, as I recall, at this table, complained that we were not wireless in this building, couldn't believe it. It didn't rise to that level of, at least amongst the folks that I run with, until we had our first public commission on a legislature meeting, and people were saying, what's going on around here? You're not wireless. And we know that the lobby did go wireless downstairs in the lobby message center during the last session. So it's been on the horizon, but I don't recall that it ever really got up to the heated pitch that it did, except for the last couple of months. Anyway, I hope that we pass a motion today recommending this to the full commission, that we move forward with this project, and if that requires the seeking of funding through the emergency board, that's a message we should send to the leadership.
Thank you, Commissioner Garber.
Yes, thank you, Mark Garber, for the record. I was one of the people who complained at the first meeting, and because I wanted to check my email and wasn't able to do that, and so I didn't mean for you to go off and spend $400,000, but that solves the problem. It's sort of with the tour today, we saw a lot of areas of the building that nothing's happened for 30 years, and I think this is sort of an example, too, of that we probably should be there already, and now is an opportunity to do it. I agree that the laptops, and it sounds like this has already been done, should be a whole separate item, because then it gets into what we discussed earlier, and that is, you know, what's the protocol and rules for using them. And I was a little confused by the numbers. If the total project was $650,000 and $400,000 of that is for the wireless, was $250,000 is what was being estimated for the laptops, or is that something else? Because that seems really high compared to, you know, what you can actually purchase on the market. But maybe it was including other things.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, that is the fact. The last time we looked at providing 90 laptops, actually probably a little bit more, 92, so we have some spares for members.
Mm-hmm.
But 90 laptops for each member, that's roughly the cost. Mm-hmm. You know, there were over $2,000 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just... It's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and the prices of laptops have come down since we did that study, but mm-hmm. We're still in that same general ballpark. It's not far removed from that.
Right. So, are we looking for a motion to recommend that we proceed with the wireless project and not take any action on the laptops? Is that?
Well, I guess that's a point of discussion, because I stand in that same position. I am not for the providing of laptops. I'm kind of in the same position Gary is. If we're going to forward this today, it would be, as far as I'm concerned, basically this, and that is what the proposal says: switch to wireless technology in the entire capital. If we need to append a note there that at least as far as the recommendation of this committee goes, does not include the providing of laptops to members, we can certainly do that if we feel, first of all, so inclined to move this today, and secondarily to append it that way. Commissioner Burns.
Bridget Burns, do we want to go with the entire building, or, I mean, what was the sense from other folks about whether or not we should be focusing on hotspots or an entire blanket of the building?
Good question. Let me come back to that for just a moment. Let me ask about signal leakage, if I may, to adjoining neighborhoods when we do this kind of thing. We have a very large neighborhood immediately to the south here, and I'm just kind of wondering, what about signal leakage and people in adjoining neighborhoods using this technology if the whole building is wired?
Chair Wilson, the part of the site survey last week was looking at that, and they can install the access points in the perimeter areas of the building and direct them and tune them so that there is some, for sure. But the further you get through the sidewalk towards State Street, for example, the less strong the signal gets. So, again, there is some, but we don't view it as a major problem.
That is not a problem when... I don't understand the technology as it relates to this. Does it have a capacity as to how many people can use the system at once?
Chair Wilson, yes. One access point is about 25 people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the capacity of a room and how many people you think would be using at a time, you put one or more access points in an area. You also measure how far the signal leads directionally.
Mm-hmm.
You want to minimize overlap, but make sure you get adequate coverage.
All right. So you would be saying then that those not in this building, but in the parking lot or at Willamette University, you would not have that many people hitchhiking on the signal, so to speak, that it would harm capacity significantly within this building.
Chair Wilson, yes, that's true.
Commissioner Wilhelm.
Well, all of a sudden, this is a new twist. This would be a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week operation, would it? Therefore, I could see on Sunday morning, well, all of a sudden, we've got a bunch of people sitting on the front steps of the Capitol with their computers, because they can do that and avoid having to pay an access charge to the Internet.
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms, yes, that could happen. We could shut the system down outside of business hours. However, the building is open to the public, sometimes outside normal working hours. The state police use the building outside normal working hours, so it's...
Well, I absolutely would not want to see it shut down. I mean, legislators do some of their best work in here, when everybody else is gone. It would not be right to shut it down. I'm just trying to visualize, because it doesn't take college students
very long to figure out how to take advantage of a system like this. You've got a whole block full of them right over here.
I mean, you know.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
But most of them have free internet over there.
That's probably true.
Pardon me, I did not hear that.
Sorry, Bridget Burns. Most of them have free wireless internet over there, and it would be a stronger signal, and they typically are given an access point card or entry number by being a student. I mean, at OSU, for instance, I have free wireless anywhere on campus, so I doubt that I would want to sit out in the cold on some slab where I could possibly get injured by a skateboarder.
For the record, Carl Wilson, I know the IT Governance Board has thought about this idea of people lined up in the parking lots out here in the during the weekends. That is not seen as a problem to you?
Chair Wilson, no, it's not. The project committee is also talking with other state legislatures and other places that have wireless hotspots, like the state library across the street, and that has not been identified as a problem by any of those.
Okay. Let's get back to Commissioner Burns' question again. An informal poll of members present, entire or hotspots?
I guess, is there a whole lot of work involved in giving us the alternatives? I mean, if you were to do hotspots, how much money do you really save? Is it significant enough that we'd want to look at that?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Garber, the design that we will get, we can easily eliminate. For example, if we didn't want wireless in this room, we just wouldn't put access points in this room. Mm-hmm. There would be bleed from adjacent areas, but the signal wouldn't be very good in this room. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much a one-for-one cost. There are some overhead costs that cover the entire system. However, most of the cost is driven by an access point and a cable pull to that access point. So mm-hmm. when you eliminate one or 10, you eliminate 1% or 10% of the cost.
Mm-hmm. What is an access? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
Gary Wall.
Commissioner Wallace.
How much space does one access point cover then? Just one access point, one room? Or one access point, one floor of the wings, or, for example?
Chair Wilson, Commissioner Wilhelms, an access point covers about 300 feet. But it depends. We have marble in this building. It doesn't bleed through the marble very well. So if you hit a marble wall, then it doesn't bleed anymore. So that's the engineering involved in the site survey to identify, if I put an access point here, how far does it cover? Where do I need to put the next one to pick up so you still have a signal?
Well, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that if we go hotspots, and I understand the saving of money, and that would be good, but I'm not shocked by the total cost here at all. I think the total cost for completely covering the building is not all that bad. At least it doesn't seem that bad to me. And I wonder how many problems we create for ourselves if we try to identify the hotspots. Every legislator, I think, is going to want to make sure their office is in a hotspot, where their traffic patterns are in the building are hotspots. I sure would. I'd want to make sure that every place I went was a hotspot so that I didn't have to worry about being able to get out here and not get out someplace else where I might be. And I just don't know how you would prioritize spots as opposed to just going ahead and doing the whole building and getting it done. So I would vote for the entire building.
Commissioner Burns.
I'm a little bit mixed on it, Bridget Burns, for the record. Just because there is, I'm not a fan of trying to regulate people's behavior, but there is always the concern that, you know, take this to the greatest extent. You're in a committee meeting, and every person in the audience is typing away, checking email, screws in the internet, you know. Does that create the kind of environment you're looking for? Whereas having hotspots, you have segregated areas where folks who are participating in the public process come and they do their work and then they can go back in. I mean, that's a concern. But also, on the other side of it, we have serious wiring problems in the staff offices, and this would help theoretically eliminate them. So I'm kind of neutral. It's really, if we have a cost problem imposed upon us, then obviously I think the hotspot should be utilized. But if we can shoot for the moon, let's shoot for the moon.
Thank you. For the record, Carl Wilson, asking about the appropriation that will pay for this. What appropriation will pay for this project?
Chair Wilson, we don't know that at this point. We've been in communication with the leadership offices, and I think they're looking at different options. I think one of the options is EBOR. I think there are other options as well in terms of available funding. And they are also talking about partnerships as well.
Thank you. That question prompted the appearance of Dave Henderson here. Dave, if you go ahead and identify yourself, please.
Dave Henderson, Legislative Administrator. Rich pretty much summed it up there. We don't have any funding available in the Legislative Administration budget. There may be some money available in the Assembly budget, but not enough to cover the entire project. So at this point, it would be our intention to go to the Emergency Board to seek an appropriation, and with the timeline that we've built would indicate that should that be necessary, it would be the April E-Board meeting that we would go to.
Okay. Further comments, Commissioner Wilhelms.
The only other thing that we might want to add to this motion, which is probably going to be, if we have it today, it's going to be fairly lengthy, would be to encourage, I think, to encourage the leadership to deal with the usage of wireless technology in those sensitive places in the building by rule, that we should recommend that to them, that if, for example, if the motion was going to be to make the whole building wireless, that we do that, but then that we encourage the leadership to deal with the usage of wireless technology in those places that may be sensitive, such as on the floor in committee hearing rooms, those places we've talked about already today, that they deal with that matter by House and Senate rule.
Thank you for that, Carl Wilson, with the record. Dave Henderson, let me ask you that question. Is that something that we can just presuppose that they would do anyway, or do you see that as something that this committee needs to append to here?
Chair Wilson, in the IT governance board meetings, that has already been discussed, and the leadership of the respective chambers are aware that there are issues that they would have to deal with on a rule basis. But I don't believe that I believe that having it as part of your motion would certainly make sense, just to reiterate the point that there are business decisions that they must make about the use of the system that are not technical issues at all, but are clearly business issues that the business users need to make those decisions.
Okay, thank you. Back to Rich for a moment. In analyzing this whole situation, the techies and the IT governance board, I'm sure, have looked at this closely enough to see if we are, by adopting this technology, creating any new problems. I know they call unanticipated problems just that, because you don't anticipate them. But is there anything here that we should know that could potentially occur on the downside as a result of this?
Chair Wilson, Rich Inglis, one of the things that has come up is what we've just talked about, interruption of a standard business process throughout the Capitol in sensitive areas, committee rooms, the chambers, other areas where the process would interrupt what normally needs to happen in those areas. So that's the primary thing that we've identified so far. From a technical standpoint, we don't have major issues with this. The cost is driven, in this case, somewhat by cabling, and so there are problems there in the building, as you already know. This installing wireless means that we have to deal with that issue in the certain areas where we're going. So that's been identified as a problem too. But it's one where if you spend enough money, you can make it work. And so Herb does need to take a hard look at this. That's one of the other problems. I don't recall any other major problems. Mickey, do you have any thoughts there?
Chair Wilson, I have a question about support of customers. We have a very high standard for customer support of PCs and would want to extend that standard to legislators and staff using the wireless network. We're being told by other states that run wireless networks in their capital that the support issue really is not an issue. It doesn't substantially increase the workload. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to believe that's true, but I also want to make sure that we continue to strive for excellent customer service.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, it's a question to you. Do you intend to have another committee meeting
of this committee prior to the February 13th full commission meeting?
That's a great question. Marjorie and I were just talking about that before we got going, and I don't have an answer.
Well, the reason I asked, Mr. Chair, is probably obvious, but if we're not ready to do the motion today, that would be okay with me as long as we would take care of it prior to the February 13th full commission meeting so that we can deal with it at that meeting in full commission.
Yeah. Marjorie, let me ask you, we didn't get as far in that discussion as I wanted to about the next meeting before this one began today. Are there anything blocking us from that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just tell you that the first couple weeks of January are relatively full, but we can certainly fit in another meeting the end of January, beginning of February, through about the 8th of February, because again, we would want to put some sort of recommendation on an agenda for the full commission meeting, mm-hmm. and the deadline for that agenda would be, the afternoon of the 8th.
Okay, so it would force us to have a meeting in the very first days of February.
Yeah, within that very first week of February at the latest.
Okay, I could see doing something on Thursday, the second, but let me ask one question again before we do that. Carl Wilson, for the record. It would then be possible, if we switched to wireless communication in Capitol for the entire gallery in a committee hearing, to be web surfing and doing other things during a committee hearing itself.
Chair Wilson, yes, that's correct. If we wire the entire building, that could happen. We may be able to turn specific ones off, but that's not recommended. And there would be enough bleed, I believe, from the other committee rooms that it's absolutely possible.
And I'm not saying whether that's good or bad. It can be both. Dave?
Chair Wilson, again, that is an issue that could be covered through House and Senate rules.
Right.
Because if you made it a part of the rules that electronic devices could not be used during committee meetings in the committee rooms, then it would be up to the chair to enforce that. Mm-hmm. But it certainly could be covered through the rule process.
Yeah. Chair Wilson, if I might make a mechanical comment, I noticed that the title of this initiative is Switch to Wireless, and from our perspective, there isn't a switch involved here. It is augmenting our current network. So just from a mechanical standpoint, I would encourage you to take the word switch away. It's an additional service.
All right. Let me ask the committee for just a moment. This is really new territory for us, amending these on the fly. If we were to do this today and pass this out today, we would obviously make that switch, and that is add wireless technology in the entire Capitol. And then we would also append to that the verbiage about rules. Are we comfortable with doing that today?
I am.
Okay. Commissioner Burns, you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Garber indicates, too, let's take just a few moments to talk about the language. And Gary, you took the lead on that a few moments ago, and let me lean on you for this. If we were to add verbiage to this proposal, how would you like that to read?
With regard to the rules, Mr. Chairman?
Right.
Well, generally, I would add language to the motion that would include the seeking, if necessary, of funding from the emergency board. And I would also add language that would, I think I'd probably use the word encourage, the legislative leadership or the presiding officers to pursue the discipline on the usage of wireless technology in sensitive areas in the building through House and Senate rules. Now, we could, if I had a pencil and paper inside out for a minute, I might be able to wordsmith all that. But those are the general areas that I would cover in addition to just saying that we ought to add wireless technology throughout the state capitol building. Period.
I would add those two pieces, the funding through the e-board if necessary, and the encouragement of the leadership would probably be a better word, but it could be leadership or it could be presiding officers or legislative bodies, houses, and pick whatever words you think are the best to restrict the usage or discipline the usage of wireless technology in sensitive areas.
Thank you. Let me defer back to our guests here for just a moment. So when it comes to the actual rulemaking for the usage of laptops within the building, I'd like to, Dave, I'll run to you for a moment. I'd like to get your opinion on who best to regulate that. House leadership, Senate leadership, who might be best in your opinion?
Chair Wilson, definitely the leadership of the House and the Senate.
Okay.
They're the people with the authority to enforce the rules that would be adopted by the respective bodies, so definitely them, through the chief clerk and through the secretary of the Senate, but definitely they are the ones who should be empowered to do that.
Right, thank you. I agree with that.
And they will seek the actual language for the rule, of course, they will seek from legislative council.
Commissioner Garber.
Mark Garber, for the record. Maybe if I just took a stab at something here, and then we can maybe amend a little bit, but if we were to have a motion that said something to the effect, add wireless technology in the entire capital, requesting e-board funding if necessary, encourage leadership to review the rules and ensure that wireless technology does not create a distraction in sensitive areas, does that kind of get at what we're looking at there?
Sure. I would just say House and Senate leadership.
Okay.
And Marjorie, you kind of boiling this out for us.
Yeah, and I have something similar to what Commissioner Garber is proposing. So that bullet point number one is add wireless technology to the entire capital. Number two, seek, if necessary, funding from the emergency board for implementation of the project. And bullet point number three would be encourage House and Senate leadership to develop rules regulating the use of wireless technology in sensitive areas. Or in the building.
Within the Capitol building.
Within the Capitol building.
Sensitive areas is open to interpretation.
Yes, mm-hmm. The building, yeah. Within the Capitol building.
If we say within the Capitol building, are we not controlling it outside the Capitol building? Is that an issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you control it within the Capitol, doesn't that imply that you're also controlling what's happening outside of the building? Because you're tuning the wireless.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that. Let me ask the committee members. Are you comfortable with that? Okay, if you would go ahead and restate that again, Marjorie.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe your motion is add wireless technology to the entire Capitol. Seek, if necessary, funding from the emergency board for implementation of the project. And encourage House and Senate leadership to develop rules regulating the use of wireless technology within the Capitol building.
Okay. So satisfactory to members present?
Yes, we'll make the motion.
Okay, thank you.
You made it?
Also moved.
Okay.
So moved by Commissioner Wilhelms. Any discussion? Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Would you like to have a roll call?
Mr. Chair, that would be up to you. Would you like a roll call? Kelly's prepared to do so.
Let's have a roll call. Kelly, please.
Burns?
Aye.
Garber?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Excuse.
Sheriff Ramirez?
He is excused.
Wilhelms?
Aye.
Chair Wilson.
Aye. And the motion carries.
And, Mr. Chair, who would like to lead for discussion? For discussion of the commission when we finally get there.
I would be happy to, but I would be happy to defer. Basically, what that means is that before the full commission, you would essentially carry the bill, as we call it, in the legislative process. I know some of you who have not been in this process probably wouldn't be anxious to do that right out of the box, so I would be happy if...
I'm totally comfortable with the chair carrying that.
Okay. All right. Note that I will carry that then before the full commission. Okay. We are out of time. We're 5 minutes over time today. And by the way, guests, thank you. Appreciate your presentation today. We have Proposal 120 and Proposal 136 today. 120 is when speaking on the record, we require people to state name and so forth. And number 136 is ensure that a wheelchair is available for people with acute health problems. Let me ask you, Marjorie, for a moment. I don't want to leave any low-hanging fruit unplucked here in the time that we have to meet. Is there anything here that you judge we can do very quickly here with a minimum of discussion?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think you can take care of both of these as low-hanging fruit.
Okay. I'll go ahead and open a work session on item number 136, and that is ensure that a wheelchair is available for people with acute health problems. Let me turn to Marjorie for just a moment, if you would go over our staff measure summary.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this proposal came from a public person who apparently had an acute health problem, was interested in accessing a wheelchair, and apparently wasn't able to do so, and suggested that, you know, a wheelchair be available to the public in the event that they have an acute health problem. However, there is the Oregon State Capital Emergency Action Plan, and if a person is injured or is in need of medical or first aid attention, which is essentially a wheelchair, can include a wheelchair, that those people are to contact Legislative Administration or the Capitol Mall State Police, and those responders would have access to the wheelchair that is available down by Visitor Services. So at this point, I think you could probably say that a wheelchair is available.
Okay, we can say that?
Yes.
Okay.
It is currently available. However, if a person is in need of a wheelchair, they obviously are having some sort of injury or some medical or first aid attention, and we are at this time required to call Legislative Administration or the State Capitol Police.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do have a question. That's assuming that the only time you'd be using the wheelchair is if somebody got hurt and needed it while they were here. What happens if somebody was coming into the building that needed the wheelchair for access purposes? Are we saying that you either bring your own wheelchair or forget it?
How are they getting to the building?
I don't know. I got a 92-year-old aunt that might like to come down here and go through the building, and she has a walker. But when she gets into the building, it'd be really convenient if there was a wheelchair for her to sit in and be wheeled around. My other question is, if you got one wheelchair in the building, for a building this size, one's probably adequate, but maybe two would be better.
Thank you. Before we turn to David Henderson for that, perhaps this fruit is not hanging as low as we thought it was. Commissioner Garber.
I guess I'm confused about we were being asked to ensure that a wheelchair is available, but you're saying that
A wheelchair is available. And so what we're clarifying is that, thank you, public person, for bringing this issue up, and we have clarified that a wheelchair is available. And specifically, the wheelchair was requested for somebody with an acute health problem. If somebody's having a health problem, we have to contact Legislative Administration or the Capitol Mall Police. And so those people, those responders, will access that wheelchair if needed. I think there are probably some liability issues involved here.
Okay. So I guess I agree with Commissioner Wilhelms that if someone needed a wheelchair for convenience, I mean, if, you know, shopping malls have carts and, you know, Disneyland or wherever, you know.
Sure.
And so maybe that would be a good thing to do.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Garber, I think that's an entirely different proposal than what has been requested here.
Yeah. Okay, I think we need to watch that. So bottom line is that this situation has already been met. We're simply responding to a member of the public who has asked us to respond to something that we find, in fact, is already covered. Okay.
So is that, Mr. Chairman, then that should be our response? That would be our response back to the full commission.
Mm-hmm.
That we have looked into it and a wheelchair is available
for people with acute health problems. Okay.
How would a motion be formulated for someone looking for this?
Pardon me?
How would a motion be formulated?
I think that we would just simply, at this point in time, make a motion that parallels the language of this. You could simply read it. Marjorie, any objection to that?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Burns, I think that a motion would simply be that to the full commission that the committee has looked into this particular proposal and we we recommend no further action because we've discovered that a wheelchair is available.
So moved.
Okay. Any discussion? All right, we'll go to a vote, seeing no discussion. And Kelly, please.
Aye.
Garber?
Aye.
Representative
Krieger? Excuse.
Sheriff Ramirez?
Excuse.
Wilhelms?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Votes aye. And Proposal 136 will be passed to the full commission. All right, we'll open a work session on Proposal Number 120. And Marjorie, if you would read that, please.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, Proposal Number 120 stated that it was again from the public, and they asked that when speaking on the record, people should be required to state their name each time they speak so that people watching on video or listening online after a meeting will know who's speaking. And the research that I did is basically during committee meeting, all committee questions and testimony goes through the chair. The chair acknowledges the witnesses. The chair acknowledges the members as they're speaking. So there's a lot of communication by name on the record. When it comes to voting on the record, either there's a roll call vote like Kelly is doing, or there can be a without objection vote where we don't actually call roll. And I see that's where one of the little problems could come up is that if a motion and vote is without objection, what happens if a member is excused, say Representative Krieger or Raul Ramirez? It's at the discretion of the chair to then state on the record for those people listening far out in Eastern Oregon or somewhere else, well, that Representative Krieger or Commissioner Ramirez are excused. And then on the floor, the presiding officer has to acknowledge the member before they speak in any way. So again, there's a lot of communication through the chair to the members announcing names back and forth.
Any discussion? Commissioner Burns.
What would a motion look like for this particular proposal?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Burns and members of the committee, I think, again, a motion could be that the committee recommends that the commission take no further action since we've discovered that there is a lot of communication with identifying members as they're speaking or witnesses as they're speaking.
Yes, Commissioner Wilhelms.
I would approach it a little differently. Mm-hmm. I would do it with a motion to encourage the leadership to deal with the question by rule. It is a matter of rule.
Yes.
It's a matter of, and it should be dealt within the rules. And I'm not sure that it's not addressed in the rules. I can't recall it specifically, but I don't think it's quite this direct. And it's probably a question of common courtesy and decorum. However, if somebody's looking for a requirement, which would give the chair a little more ability to direct a person to state your name when you speak, and I'm probably the worst offender of doing this at this meeting.
Yes, you are.
And I'm sorry for that. But in any event, I do believe that it ought to be formalized. I think it is a matter of courtesy and decorum, and it does help, and it eliminates questions later. It saves time if a person does state their name. And so I think it's a good idea. I don't know how practical it is to assume that every single time a person speaks, they're going to state their name.
I agree with you. As far as the proposal goes, I like the intent of it, but I do want to take a little extra time in honing this before we actually do something with it. It can become ponderous, obviously. And frankly, Commissioner Wilhelms, had you stated your name every time before you spoke today, it would have been very ponderous. And so, so what
I got the message.
You know how I mean that. And so, yeah, I want to just be a little more careful in how we craft this. I do intend to work with this proposal, but I would like to spend a little bit more time with it if there's no objection here. Okay, so we'll close the work session on Proposal Number 120, and I believe that about takes care of any questions, comments, thoughts before we formally adjourn. Well, thank you for your participation today. Very much appreciated, and I will be back to you shortly with the proposal for our next meeting. Okay. Nothing further. Committee is adjourned.